Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. How a map artist goes from doodling to detailed depictions. Hi friends, welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom for the second day of our career article for this month. My name is Naomi, and back in the studio with me today are Carolyn and Nathaniel. Thanks everyone for being back today for the second day of the life of a map artist. It's a bit of a people article, a little bit of maybe a design article, a little history as well, but we're focusing on the career aspect of it, how someone decides to become a map artist. Now, first of all, Carolyn, yesterday we learned exactly what a map artist is called.
Yes, a map artist is called a cartographer. Okay. It's kind of a hard word to say, but so it just means that someone who draws maps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you graph something, usually it has to do with illustrating, thinking of something like calligraphy, right? And of course, cart is for maps. Like if in some languages, that's what the map will be called, is a cart instead of a map. So you can look for that. So cartography, drawing maps. And who exactly are we learning about in this article, Nathaniel?
We're learning about a man called Christopher Allen Smith, who largely makes historical maps, but very much in his own style.
Yeah, very much in his own style. That's a good point. There's a lot of beautiful illustrations on these couple of pages, page 14 and 15. We can see that his style is quite unique.
Yes, it is. We were talking about how it may be a little bit similar to some other things that we've seen, but if you look at these things, his lettering, like we talked about yesterday as well, just seems to be very unique and has its own flavor.
Mm, definitely. But these are really considered works of art, these maps. And usually when I think of a map, art is not the first word that I associate with it. I would maybe say maps can be a tool, they can be useful.
Right, yeah. When we usually think of a map, we think, oh, well, how do I get from place A to place B? What's the best road to take? But here we see that maps are more than just telling us how to go somewhere or which direction to take. They can take us back through time.
We had a wonderful line yesterday where it said that Smith feels like maps are a time machine for the imagination. What does he mean by that?
These maps, you can look at them and just sense that there's another place, another world even, being represented, especially with these historical maps. And it just takes you back to those places.
Yeah. Now, how exactly did Smith get into this line of work?
Well, he was first entranced by his father's hand-drawn reconnaissance maps of Vietnam. So these were maps used during the Vietnam War, and they were in his house growing up, and he would stare at them for hours.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that was the first thing that kind of grabbed his interest. What else?
The second thing is a gift that he received from his grandfather. It was a world atlas filled with maps of all different kinds of places. Maybe not necessarily really artistic maps, but very informative maps, and even that inspired him.
Mm, definitely. So now he had this love of maps. He's also a talented designer. A graphic designer is someone, of course, who does layouts of pages, who creates logos and works with fonts and illustrations and so on to create things like, for example, Advanced Magazine. We have a team of graphic designers who work on this publication. So he knows how to do that kind of thing. He has talent as a designer, and so that sort of goes together, right?
Right, and it kind of evolved into what Smith now uses as his map-making style, which has a fanatical amount of detail.
Okay, so that's a point that we made yesterday that shows that even though those two things, his love of maps and his talent as a designer, were both very useful, it didn't mean that making maps was just something really easy then, right?
No, I mean, I think that this takes a lot of detail. You actually have to study, you know, geography and a lot of things about the areas that you're designing as a map. It's much more than art, but it certainly can be, obviously, great art.
Right, and we saw an example at the end of yesterday of his first map.
Yes, his first map was of the Republic of Texas, so a historical map before Texas was really considered part of the United States, and it took him 2 years.
Wow.
To perfect this work, and now it's his most collected.
Okay. So it does take time. It takes a lot of attention to detail, a lot of care. We'll find out more about the process today, so please join us on page 15 as we continue our reading of The Life of a Map Artist.
Attention to detail. Recently unveiled, the first map in a new Civil War series draws from exhaustive research. As I work on each map, I learn a tremendous amount about each era, Smith says. All that detail requires a large canvas. A framed print of the 60 by 40 inch original was difficult to maneuver into the artist's studio in Texas. As informative as the maps can be, they appeal equally to art collectors and historians because of Smith's unique palette of sepia tones and a highly detailed pen and ink stipple technique that uses a density of dots and halftones to create a look reminiscent of American currency. The many notations in his distinctly eccentric hand lettering are artful in and of themselves. Basically, I created my own font, he says. Smith says his influences include the work of illustrator Jack Unruh and European maps from the 15th and 16th centuries. Intensive cross-research of many sources ensures accuracy, but unearths so much information that a great deal of time goes into deciding what goes and what stays.
So we learned yesterday about Smith's first map, but now we have a new map that was recently unveiled. What does it mean if something is unveiled?
Revealed or uncovered. Maybe you couldn't see it at first, but the curtain was drawn back, we might say, and there it is.
Okay, good. And what is it exactly, Carolyn?
It is the first map in a new Civil War series.
Okay, so tell us a bit about the Civil War.
Well, the Civil War was a very major war in the United States in the 1800s, and it split the North and South over economics and slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was a very big deal because the Southern states all wanted to form their own country.
Right. And actually, you still hear some echoes of this today sometimes in some parts of the United States where there are people who still have a bit of some strong feelings about this history. And so it's something that's quite important to a lot of people, and it definitely did change the United States, changed its character quite a lot as a result of this war. So this new series, it draws from a lot of research. So if you draw from something, I think of like a well where you have to take a bucket and draw water out from it. It doesn't mean you're drawing, although it's very clever that they use that word here. But it's actually a different meaning. You're sort of taking from something big. And what is he taking from?
Exhaustive research. Exhaustive, you think about exhausting, being very tired. So exhaustive is going to kind of to extremes, going to a lot of research, putting a lot of effort and work into this research.
Right. It makes you tired how much you're working on this.
Yeah.
So, and it sounds tiring, just as he talks about it.
Yes. He says, as I work on each map, I learn a tremendous amount about each era. So he's not just learning about the geography of the area. He's learning the history and the time period and what is going on when this map is supposed to take place.
Yeah. Right. And I think that's a really interesting aspect of this job that would really appeal to me, actually. this idea that in the middle of creating something new, you're also learning so much about what's happened in the past. I think it would be pretty amazing to have a job that really involved so much learning all the time.
Yeah, I mean, look at everything that he includes in that illustration on page 14, Battlefield, Civil War. All those pictures of the historical figures. I see Abraham Lincoln on top, probably Jefferson Davis on the bottom, and all these little pictures of different events on the sides as well. All that stuff that I'm sure that he researched and knew more about as he went on in these projects that he decided to include.
Right. He calls it a tremendous amount of information. And if something is tremendous, it means it's just huge. You can hardly measure it. And so he says that all that detail, it requires something interesting.
It requires a large canvas. And so the canvas is what he's going to be drawing the map on, the canvas sheet. And usually when I hear canvas, I think of paintings.
Right.
Not maps.
Yes. Right. So like scenery or portraits maybe, but not maps. But it says here there's a bit of a challenge with these large canvases.
Yeah, a framed print of the 60 by 40 inch original was difficult to maneuver into the artist's studio in Texas. Maneuver being, you know, this verb here is moving something, kind of taking something from point A to point B, and often it takes kind of a bit of a strategy to get it where it needs to go.
Yes, so I think of like parallel parking, mm-hmm. or maybe parking a scooter in anywhere. You have to maneuver it very carefully. You really need to work with it and move it just a little bit at a time back and forth until you get it just right. So that was the challenge with this huge piece of art as well. Now going on to the next paragraph, how do we begin?
As informative as the maps can be, they appeal equally to art collectors and historians. So this I find to be very interesting, that historians would value the map because it's a historic map, obviously.
Right. It's informative. And of course, when I think of a map, that's the first thing I think of. Informative. It gives you information. But they appeal to other people as well.
Right. So here, art collectors are also interested in them because of Smith's unique palette of sepia tones and a highly detailed pen and ink stipple technique. So these are very, very specific, I think, to the art world.
Yes.
And not at all to map making.
Right. Not very specific to maps at all. But first of all, a unique palette of sepia tones.
Yeah, when I hear palette, I think of what the painter holds in his hand with its many different paints and colors. And so you're choosing from this palette different colors to use. Sepia is, I think, mostly kind of a brown, maybe sometimes a little reddish, but mostly shades of brown that are used.
Right, so anything sort of in the yellow, red, orange, brown range might be sepia tones. But then what's the other thing? This highly detailed pen and ink stipple technique. Now, a stipple technique, that's not a very familiar term, stipple, but it actually explains it in the rest of that sentence.
Yes. So if you stipple something, that means you use a high density of dots and half tones to create a look reminiscent of American currency. So if you want to draw something using a stipple technique, then you're going to take a very fine pen and you're going to make hundreds and thousands of dots over and over and over in a small area. There won't be a lot of lines. It's all dots.
Right. So big art history people might think of pointillism, mm-hmm. as that whole school of painting as being kind of a similar technique. But actually today when we zoom in on a photograph, we get the same idea from the pixels, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Now all these little squares that make up these pictures, maybe each square is a different color, which kind of makes me think of these dots and these half tones. You zoom in close, like, well, that doesn't look like what the color looks like much further back. Might be the similar idea.
Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that they talk about currency here is helpful because that's an example that we can all look at, right?
Yeah. So if you look at an American dollar bill, you'll see that the ink is kind of dotted and not all of the colors are the same shade.
Right. And you can take a look, actually, if you have any kind of collection, maybe, of different bills from around the world. You can see which kinds of techniques are used in all of these different currencies. It's pretty fun. Get out your magnifying glass and have a look. But the many notations in his distinctly eccentric hand lettering are artful as well. Now, eccentric, actually, that fits in well with what we were saying earlier.
Yeah, eccentric is kind of in its own way strange, but also it's mostly a positive word. You think of an eccentric person, they might be strange in some ways or unusual in some ways, but also enthusiastic and energetic as well, usually.
Right. Often I'll say my taste in music is very eccentric because I like a really wide variety of things, you know, and so that could be a little eccentric. But his hand lettering is also artful. And how does he explain it?
He says, basically, I created my own font. So when we think of fonts, we think of, oh, well, I'll just type up a little letter or I'll type an essay. Which font should I use? Or your teacher tells you which font to use. But here he's made his own. And it's quite unique.
Yes. It looks a little bit like stuff I've seen in like a Cirque du Soleil poster or something. But it's a quite unusual look, I think. And so he made his own type of lettering. In the next paragraph, we hear a little bit about his influences.
Yes, his influences include the work of illustrator Jack Unruh and European maps from the 15th and 16th centuries. Now, I don't know much about Jack Unruh. I wonder if their styles are kind of similar if we were to look at some of his stuff.
Well, that's a good bonus assignment if any of you want to look him up and compare these two artists and see the similarities and differences. Of course, an influence, this doesn't mean that you're copying somebody, right? Sometimes we ask musicians this question. We'll say, well, who are some of your influences? What does it really mean?
Well, it means it's kind of what inspires you. So you look at something and you think, oh, that's really cool. Maybe I'll change it a little bit, tweak it, and make it my own. So it's something that gives you an idea to create your own version.
Good. Now, something else, of course, that helps him create his own version is exactly what he was talking about before, all of this tremendous amount of information he learns, right?
Mm-hmm. He does intensive cross-research of many sources to ensure accuracy. So he's probably going to look at maps of the same area so that he can be sure that he's drawing something accurate, even if he's putting a lot of his own imagination into the work.
Right, and this is a really good point for anyone who ever writes research papers as well. One source is not usually enough. You need to double check, cross-reference. And so all of that cross-referencing, though, it unearths a lot of information.
Yes, so much information that a great deal of time goes into deciding what goes into the map or what goes out and what stays. So he has to make the decision, I have all of this information in front of me. What can I actually include and what do I have to ignore for now?
That's a tough question. Let's go on to our last reading.
Searching for treasure. Most of all, Smith, 41, wants his maps to tell a story, to create that portal for the imagination through a combination of art, geography, and history. I am constantly looking at maps, old and new, for ideas, Smith says. The European maps from the 14 to 1600s really inspire me. I was a map nerd. I am still a map nerd. They are intriguing to me. You look at a map, and it's a starting point that allows you to imagine what an area looked like in the past. A good map allows you to imagine what it's like to travel the world.
Now, I love this subtitle here of our last section, Searching for Treasure. Why do you think that's an appropriate title here?
Well, a lot of times when I think of maps, you think of a treasure map.
Yes, unfortunately, I don't have any treasure maps lying around. But what exactly, what kind of treasure is Smith trying to share?
Well, here it says, most of all, Smith, 41, age 41, wants his maps to tell a story. So the story, the tale, is a treasure for him.
Mm. So again, to create that portal, as we were saying before, for the imagination, that doorway into another world, how?
To create that portal for the imagination through a combination of art, geography, and history. So it's bringing a lot of really great elements together in one place.
And I always love this. I love this with our articles as well. Whenever there's an article that could be considered more than one category, it tends to be really interesting, you know, because there's a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and it all combines together. So here we have that combination of art, geography, and history. And, of course, Smith continues to be inspired by maps.
Yeah, we talked about cross-research a minute ago. Here he says, I am constantly looking at maps, old and new, for ideas.
Mm-hmm. So he wants to keep challenging himself to find something a little bit different, a little bit new, just something that can inspire him.
Yeah, and he continues that the European maps from the 1400 to 1600s really inspire him. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really great period of maps to look at because that's when a lot of exploration was being done. And those maps may not be very accurate.
That's a good point. That's a really good point because they were still discovering places in the world. You know, not everyone knew where everything was, and they certainly didn't have satellite imaging like we do today to help double check. So you're right. A lot of those maps are quite inaccurate, and it's very interesting to look at them and see what people thought the world looked like.
Yeah, it was. And like you mentioned before, yesterday I believe you said that a map can change over time. Mm. We discover more and we learn more, and obviously what we put down on paper to show to the world will change as well.
So Smith grew up, you know, just being obsessed with maps and just loving them. Has that love decreased at all?
Well, we see that no, it hasn't. He says that he was a map nerd and he still is a map nerd. Using I, he says, I was a map nerd, I still am a map nerd. So this love obviously has not diminished.
Right. He says they are intriguing to him. So just like before, we talked about how he was entranced by his father's maps. You know, he's so fascinated by this. But even today, he's still intrigued, and he explains a bit about why.
Mm-hmm. You look at a map, and it's a starting point that allows you to imagine what an area looked like in the past. Those are his words. So for him, a map is really this door, this portal to another place, and just breaks open his imagination just to go to new places every time that he works on a map project.
Yeah, it's a very cheap way to travel, I guess. And that's how he finishes off, right?
Yes, a good map allows you to imagine what it's like to travel the world. So it allows your imagination to really take you to where these maps are. And so if you have a map of the Republic of Texas, then your imagination can take you to what Texas was like long before it was a state.
Yeah, good. Well, let's see where our imaginations take us with today's feature.
Hi, Rick. How is this semester going?
Great. I'm really enjoying my classes. How about you, Mia?
Well, things are going okay, but I'm really struggling with my cartography class.
Oh, I love maps. I had that class last year. What are you working on now?
We have a project in which we have to create a map of our home state. It's exhaustive work.
I know. There are so many details and snippets of information that you need to include to make sure the map is accurate and complete.
I never realized that map making was so challenging. I thought I could just doodle some artistic touches, and that would be it. But my professor rejected my first effort.
Oh, Professor Slabowski is very demanding when it comes to drawing maps. Reading maps is one of the mainstays of his life, so he expects perfection.
Yes! After he rejected my map, he showed me a Civil War map that he drew. It was amazing, especially how he stippled to give it an old-style appearance.
See, that's what I mean. For him, maps are a portal to the past, and the future.
What he showed me was helpful. I was able to see what he expected, and it motivated me to do a better job. In fact, I've been able to unearth some fascinating things about my home state of Arizona.
Yes, map making is a great way to learn about places. And with Arizona, you can use a broad palette to show all the different terrains of the state.
That's what I'm trying to do. Make my map a work of art, not just a boring drawing of cities and towns and roads.
I'll come over to take a look at your map later on, okay?
That sounds good, Rick. See you later.
Okay, so a lot of us are enchanted by maps. We see here in our sidebar that if you love maps, if you are a cartophile, then maybe some of you love to look at atlases, right?
Right. So if you like to look at atlases, you like to explore the world through a book filled with maps.
Okay, good. But in some books, maps serve a bit of another purpose.
Yeah, for some, the road to the potentially expensive hobby is straight and narrow, grown out of an early addiction to the fantasy lands mapped out in books by J.R.R. Tolkien or C.S. Lewis.
Now, we're all a little bit familiar with those maps, aren't we?
Yes. So if you've read The Lord of the Rings and studied the maps to explore Middle-earth or some of the other fantasy lands that J.R.R. Tolkien has created, then you would be very familiar with this type of fantasy map.
And it's fun because the author is not only using the words to draw you into the story. There's more there.
Yeah, and really, like J.R.R. Tolkien, I think he was very intent on creating a world. He made languages and, you know, wanted these maps so that really he could immerse and just put his readers into this place that he had created.
Mm. Well, if you are a cartophile, a lover of maps, or if you happen to be a cartographer, someone who creates maps, we would love to hear about you and your experiences. Even if you just enjoyed this article for one reason or another, please do let us know about it. You can find us on our Facebook page or at studioclassroom.com. Post us a comment on the English corner or send us an email, letters@studioclassroom.com. Thanks so much for being with us for these last couple of days, and we'll see you again soon for another article. Until then, this is Naomi.
This is Carolyn.
And this is Nathaniel.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.